Hey, friends, thanks for joining us on the Equipping You podcast. Our prayer is that this podcast will encourage and equip Alliance pastors and leaders to live spiritually healthy lives and lead their churches well. For more information about the Christ-centered Acts 1-8 Alliance family, visit equippingyou.org.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Equipping You podcast. This is season 11, episode, well, sort of 3, sort of 8. We're all messed up. What a shock. We're coming to you today from Columbus, Ohio, home of world famous magician Howard Thurston. He's from the early 1900s. And since then, Alan, he has disappeared.
I wonder why.
Yeah, I wonder why as well.
Is he in any relation to Thurston Howell the Third? I want to know that.
Well, not that I know of, but one wonders about the similarity of names.
It could be because he also disappeared on a 3-hour tour.
He did a 3-hour tour. Gave me a chance to sing, Alan. Thank you.
It's only fitting.
Church Ministries Leader for the Alliance.
And I'm Alan, the Director of Development for the Eastern PA District of the Alliance.
And Isaac is with us today, our producer. No Andy today because we're doing this on Zoom rather than in the studio. Cheated you out of a chance to drive to Columbus, Alan?
No, man. It is an opportunity and I missed it.
And our guest today is Tim Meyer, Vice President for Development and three-peat Equipping You podcast interviewee.
Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame, baby. So he's a great young leader. I call him young. He's a lot younger than I am. And we're going to talk with him today largely about Project Reimagine and particularly the ministry model of Project Reimagine, and bring it down to how that might apply to our local Alliance churches. Have you been thinking about that at all, Alan?
It's been great to hear, to see people rethinking. And it seems like a byproduct of this whole thing that I don't think we anticipated.
That's right. So not just reimagining national office, but starting to reimagine what church ministry looks like. So grab yourselves a Mickey D's Dr. Pepper. Whoops, I drank it all. Had that for lunch.
Oh my goodness gracious. That's not much. I guess it's an advertisement. If you drank it all, that's a good advertisement.
It is. Sit back, relax. Here we go. And we're pleased to welcome to Equipping You podcast today our good friend Tim Meyer. Tim, welcome. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you. Honored to be with you.
So this
always
is
great to have you, buddy.
Third time on Equipping You podcast, which automatically makes you a member of the Equipping You Hall of Fame.
A higher honor I could not have imagined.
It is a prestigious accomplishment that we're quite certain will launch your ministry career to heights yet unknown.
Oh, for sure.
So we've already asked you some of our standard opening questions, so we'll shift that a little bit and ask you what you're reading and listening to these days that is impacting you as a follower of Christ and as a leader.
I love to read. I like this question. There have been some good recent books. I actually just finished a book that is not specifically Christian, although the author converted to the faith a few years ago, David Brooks. The book is How to Know a Person. I like a lot of his stuff, but man, that one was really impactful to me because it's not rocket science. Like none of his stuff, you feel like you should have been able to articulate the things that he says, but he's able to put words to things that are in your heart. And I really appreciated it because I'm kind of a fast-paced, go, go, go person. And I have a tendency, I think, in work and ministry to not see people as much as I should see them. I'm networked. I have a lot of friends. But he really encourages you to slow down and really get to know the good story that God is writing in somebody's life, and to pause, be a listener first rather than a talker, which I have a hard time with. And, you know, to be able to go, look, how do we really see people as created beings in the image of our Creator, rather than just either allies or obstacles or whatever? And so there's just a lot of ministry applications in that, I think. And so, you know, that one has impacted me. I'm pulling up my list. It was a little slow. The other one I remembered is The Night is Normal by Alicia Coley. So Alicia has written a bunch of different books. Alicia Coley's book, The Night is Normal, really talks about the capacity to navigate through disillusionment in life and ministry. And it was really, I heard about it from somebody who just went through a really difficult ministry transition. I highly recommend that book. It really, again, gave language to why to stay in it when it's hard, how to navigate even disillusionment with God at times where you feel like, man, I have this covenant with him and he's promised things to me. And yet I feel like I've been let down. I remember that song that we used to sing a lot, you know, King of My Heart, you're never going to let me down. You're never going to let me down. And the truth is God does let down our expectations, but he doesn't let us down. And so I think that's what, you know, she basically makes the case that disillusionment, pain, even abusive situations, while they weren't what God intended, are how God gets our attention. And he speaks to us in the dark many times in ways that we can't hear in the light. So those two books have been impactful to me recently. I've also been doing more of an aggressive Bible reading plan this year than I normally do. And it's just been really good to journey a little bit more quickly, but like cover a lot more ground, especially in the Old Testament. And just to see these stories all together, rather than like some years I just kind of soak, you know, that's really good. This year, I'm just doing more of a survey a couple times through the New Testament, you know, through the Old Testament, plus, you know, Psalms and Proverbs repeated. And it's just been good. It's been a good discipline for me to just do a little bit more quantity. So those are things that have been shaping me. The final thing I would say, this isn't something I'm reading and listening to, but I've really recently been in a more of a discipline to share my life with a couple trusted people, not just accountability partners, but journeying more regularly. We do a weekend a year together where we each get 3 hours to just get grilled and also ask questions of one another, kind of peer mentoring. And that's just been really good for my soul and good for my heart. Guys who are in ministry, but not in the Alliance. And so they don't have any flinch when I say things like, you know, Terry Smith made this decision. It's hard to deal with that, you know, that kind of stuff.
Nobody's ever felt that before, Tim.
That's been really good.
You just gave Alan flashbacks.
Yeah. Woo, okay. Woo, all right, I got to recover. Okay, no, seriously, I appreciate that. Sounds really good, deep stuff.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. Things we all need at least somewhere on our journey, for sure.
Yeah.
Even if we're not going through right now, we can be sure there'll be a date in the future where we'll need that.
That's right.
Yeah, that's good. I'm going to probably add both those books to my Goodreads list. So thank you very much for making it longer. The Alliance, we've been through some challenges in the last couple of years. But before we talk anything about that, we'd love to hear, like, what are some things you're really encouraged about in the Alliance right now?
Yeah. You know, I think we're at a place where we're turning the corner. It feels like, how could COVID have affected us this long, right? But it really lingered for a long time. And we had changes in the denomination as well. My recent conversations with some district superintendents as we gear up for all these district conferences this spring has been a theme of, hey, we're ready to take our foot off the clutch and put it on the gas. That's been really encouraging to me. I just hear... hopeful things about, we've navigated. Yes, we're in another election year, but it feels like there's some renewed wind in the sails. Not everywhere. There's still people tired, but I sense that people are turning a corner. I mean, recently just hearing the story every Easter, hearing stories, you know, is so encouraging. But recently, just hearing all these baptisms, even in, you know, in my local church, we baptized seven, five of those were adults that have come to faith recently. Some of them, you know, one of the guys was in his 70s. And he was a story where he's going, I'm never coming to this church, you know, and ends up standing up in the baptism saying, you know, God wouldn't relent. And, you know, I'm giving him my heart. And his granddaughter got baptized at the same time. So, you know, those are cool things. And I see that, thing happening, you know, in local churches. I feel like there's a passion for God out there. And, you know, with stuff like trying to raise up new workers, and we're hitting record pace for the last 5 years on how many missionaries are signing up to go overseas. That's highly encouraging. So when you read the news or you see stuff, it's like, man, it's the doom. Everything's the end. And I sense something different. The Alliance is not without our challenges, of course, but I sense some hope rising.
Amen. Love it.
No, that's good. That's good stuff. I really appreciate that. That's good. Keep our eyes lifted up to what really matters.
So Tim, as was I, you were there for the first conversation about Project Reimagine. So reflect on that moment for us, if you will, and what are some of the reasons that surfaced that caused us to consider relocating the national office, ultimately deciding to relocate the national office, and how are some of those things already being accomplished?
Yeah, so it was 2019. I took this role in the fall of 2018. So I was 7 or 8 months into the gig. I was just starting to get my head around what this job really was, having served overseas in a local church ministry and leading in vision. I'm like, what is this vice president of development even mean? You know, I finally got my head around it. And we're on a retreat. I realized, first of all, I had a good takeaway that a Stumbo retreat means you just work somewhere else for 16 hours a day. So instead of in the office.
With a death march thrown in for good measure.
Lots of hiking. Terry calls those death marches. I enjoyed that part. But we were towards the end of the time. And John said, do you guys have more energy? And of course, you have to say yes to that. And so he's the president. So we said yes. And he started a conversation with us, and he basically said, guys, do you think we're in the right place to run the national office from? Do you think we're in the right city? And do you think we're doing this in the right way? And in that afternoon, it was interesting because we came up with a list of 7 or 8 reasons why it probably wasn't the best for us to be in Colorado Springs, even though I had lived there. You know, I lived in Colorado 8 years. My boys were little. 300 days of sun. It's a beautiful place to live. We identified things like, man, Colorado Springs just doesn't reflect the diversity of our Alliance family. I was looking at our district breakdowns today, and man, we are just such an interesting group of people, you know, just thousands and thousands of Hmong people and Vietnamese and Chinese, and Colorado Springs just doesn't reflect that reality. It was difficult to get to Colorado Springs. You had to fly into Denver or, you know, figure out the airport in Colorado Springs. Cost of living was going higher and higher. And Colorado at that year, or by 2020, I think was second in the country in housing. And it's just continued to pace. I was with somebody from Colorado Springs last week. He said, I can't afford to buy a house. You know, he's in a condo, he's in his mid-30s, but he's like, it keeps on increasing. So we're paying people out of the GCF, and you know, so we're trying to do that with the best stewardship as possible. And then really fundamentally, what started to change the conversation was we're sitting in a business park. I know we're going to talk more about this in this conversation, but we're across the street from Focus on the Family. We're in a very nice area, but really we're kind of isolated here. We're on a property that's a little standoffish. We got people who go to church and come to work, and we're really not interacting with the real world very often. But these are the people that are trying to set direction for church planting and for mission and for all those kind of things. And even on my team, people writing, you know, Alliance Life articles. And man, we do not want to be disconnected from our hurting world, and we need to be able to serve better. So we started asking, could we even flip the model here, like a lot of churches do? But to start saying, could we be more on mission even as we come to work and even as we place ourselves in a community? And so we're living that stuff out. You ask, how are we already living it out? Our staff has never been more diverse. You know, when I looked around chapel, spoke in chapel last Thursday, man, our staff is so different and in a beautiful way. It reflects the Alliance family more accurately. We're right in the heart of a community. We have access to an airport within 15 minutes. It's going a lot of places. We're also in a concentration of Alliance people. You know, within 8-hour drive, we can drive to 900 Alliance churches. And that's just a lot more than we could in Colorado. We could drive to like 100 or 200 there. And so we're seeing a lot more visitors, even though we don't even have our thing built. And we're accessing more people than we did. So that's just a bit of the story. And you know, to complete that, so we started that conversation with the president's cabinet. We all kept our mouths shut. We weren't even allowed to tell our wives at the beginning, and then we were, which was an interesting journey to go on. And then, you know, we go to the board in February of 2020, and the board approves unanimously to pursue the concept, not really to relocate yet. And then COVID hits in March, and I'm thinking, man, they're probably going to pull this decision back. And then in June, they unanimously vote to pursue relocation to one of the three cities that we had, you know, narrowed it down to. Took a ton of trips, Indianapolis, Cleveland, and Columbus, landed on Columbus, and here we are a couple of years later.
Yeah. Wow, a lot of memories come back as you share that story, Tim. What a process.
Well, and Terry, we're grateful you survived the death marches. That's good. Appreciate that.
There is no oxygen in the air at about 10 or 11,000 feet, just in case you're wondering.
It's okay. True. It was challenging.
Okay. Well, good. Challenges are good. You know, as we discuss this today, the site work is about done, getting finished up. But we're kind of in a little bit of a pause for next steps, having conversations about redesign to lower costs for Project Reimagine. So, you know, so should the broader Alliance family be discouraged, thinking that the original vision is not going to be accomplished, or how should we feel?
So some people are finding out about the redesign as they listen to this. So let me give a little bit of context. The answer is no, you shouldn't feel discouraged. I actually, I think we're doing the right thing. We're hearing the voice of God together. We're discerning his will together. That's what you do in ministry. That's what you do in leadership. So to roll back the clock just a little bit, in May, at council last year, we went public with a lot of the drawings and the concepts of Project Reimagine is what we were calling it. One Alliance Place is the build. And a lot of people were aware, but we were, you know, unpacking it for the broader Alliance family. And we set at that point the desire to raise $50 million for this project. We already had raised some. We were open to raise another 50. And we were announcing it and also kind of making our presence felt in Columbus more and more. We've learned a lot in the last year. You know, it's been almost a year since we were at council. We've learned a lot. We've learned a lot about our community in Reynoldsburg and in the greater Columbus area. We've learned what would be most effective in terms of a building. We had designed it. We felt really good about it. I believe that we were careful about that design. But as the months went on, there was some thinking about, hey, is this exactly the right design? We also learned about the Alliance family. We've been through a lot in the last year. Post-council, there were some decisions made that, you know, gave some unsettledness. There was some pain involved, of course, in those decisions. And there was also just a little bit of an unsettled feeling. And then we've learned about inflation. Since we decided to move to Columbus, inflation has gone way up. And little companies like Intel decided to move the largest microchip plant in the world within 10 miles of our build. And so the price of cement more than doubled. The cost of the project just kept going up and up and up. So we learned about that. We also learned about pace of fundraising. Since council, we've raised about $5 million. That's been encouraging. That's not on pace. And so at a recent board meeting, we decided, you know, we've got to think through what this all means. And we just decided to pray and to pause for a bit. We are going to fulfill the vision of this project. We're just now praying about what is it really going to look like? What's the building going to look like? How low could we go in terms of fundraising? What will this really cost in the end? Because we're not going to raise $50 million. We've decided that. We're not going to go for the full project. We're going to raise something much less than that. But right now we got to decide, so what is it that we want to build and what do we want to raise towards? We're already living out, like I said, a lot of the vision in a preliminary way. Diversity of staff, more missional, closer to the Alliance family, better stewards of the GCF, all those kind of things. What the property is really going to be developed into is the pause moment, but the board is locked in right now. Let me tell you, they are owning this. They know that there's a presidential transition coming in a year as well. And so they're being really prayerful and careful so that we don't rush into something that we're going to end up going, ooh, were we, you know, for financial reasons, strategic reasons, and missional reasons, we're in a bit of a pause. But I think that actually should encourage the Alliance family, that some people have voiced some concern about the scope of the project and even the cost of the project. And the leadership has heard that, the board has heard that, and we're trying to figure out what that all means right now. But we're going to live out the vision, and it's going to get done.
Good.
Well, it's great to hear. That is some encouraging news, so I appreciate that.
It is. So, Tim, as you're out with Alliance leaders and people, perhaps especially those on the younger side, what gets them excited about this project?
Yeah, it's been fun for me and interesting to see different audiences react differently to the project. I think, and it's not just across generational lines, but I would say younger generations have really responded enthusiastically to this project. And part of it is the heart to say, how do we make sure that our faith is not disconnected and even our presence is not disconnected from the people that we want to try to serve? And how do we make sure that our key leaders and our events and all those kind of things are more connected to the fabric of our societies to see faith integrated into those places, lived out in real time and not like disembodied? I think part of the younger generation's tension with faith is I'm no longer a part of the younger generation. I'm reminded of this right.
Much closer to it than I am.
Yeah. I am closer
than
you,
Terry.
Thank you. I'm closer than you. You're right. My staff that are 20 years younger than me remind me often that I'm not a part of their generation. Anyway, for the younger generation, I think the tension is to hear things, assertions about God, faith statements, declarative things, and then lives being kind of siloed away from neighbors or totally disconnected from realities of what people. I've got a kid who's a junior in high school, about to finish his junior year. His world is quite different than my world was in my junior year, and things have changed rapidly. And so we have to, as ministers of the gospel, whether we're church leaders or denominational leaders, be willing to be very open-handed about our approaches and our style and even the way we're doing officing in order to be effective in changing and rapidly changing environments. And that has really resonated with younger folks. I think also the idea of doing multi-use on a campus that's activated with kind of coffee stuff and retail and other pieces and seeing it more of a campus sort of view than just like an office building resonates with people who even want to come work here. So that's been cool. I also think the last thing I'll say is that our community is extremely diverse. And in order to have conversations with people that are from a Hindu background, a Buddhist background, a Muslim background, which a lot of our neighbors are, you got to find central places where you're actually going to intersect with them in real time. Otherwise, you go to church, you go to work, there's no real way or reason unless you're going door to door. But if you can create third space environments, some stuff can happen there in conversation and life connections and those kind of things. And we've had a lot of people in our community say, man, when that's open, I'm coming. And so I think younger generations are excited about that as well for a model.
Hey, Alan, maybe you could give the baby boomer perspective on that, Alan.
That would be impossible for me, Terry, since I'm Gen X. So,
that's right.
You know, we'd have to rely on you for that.
Come on. So, you're so close to the edge, though, Alan.
But yet I'm not. So I can't. So I appreciate that. Wow. Okay, Terry, I'm sorry for you. So on that note, I've actually heard there's another great connection out there, and that you guys are getting pretty well connected with the Columbus area Christian business leaders. Can you tell us a little about that, Tim, and why do they care? That's awesome.
Yeah, to me. That's been kind of a surprise, honestly, since we've moved here. I didn't really, I considered the missional evangelistic sort of stuff. I didn't consider the network as much. We were so networked in Colorado Springs. I think there's something like 1,000 nonprofits in Colorado Springs. I forget the exact, it's over 1,000. And so we had ministry friends everywhere. I didn't think about it, Columbus. I become good friends with a guy named Nick Nye, who leads a Christian network called For Columbus. And For Columbus brings together pockets. It's a citywide movement, pockets of business leaders, of church leaders, of nonprofit leaders, of medical, all those kind of things for the sake of the gospel. And as I've really gotten connected with more and more business leaders, they are passionate about the Columbus area. But what I've come to realize is this area in Reynoldsburg, they're really passionate about, because it was kind of a left behind area. We've gotten to know a lot of folks, local business leaders in Reynoldsburg, who've been praying over this area for years and years and waiting for somebody to come in. I mean, it was a place where drug trade was happening, where prostitution was happening. It was a gnarly kind of property. When we first came in, I saw personally a number of drug deals in the parking lot. And I thought, well, this is different than our old situation in Colorado. But a lot of those business leaders do care about their community. They're Christians. They care about this area. They also, it's been interesting that we chose Columbus to come in. And I think there was an honoring thing about that, and a desire to, and they've been extremely humble and partnership oriented rather than like protective and standoffish, where, you know, in some other communities, I think maybe a denomination coming in wouldn't have been received so openly. But a lot of these folks have come to our open houses. We're hanging out with them, having lunches with them often. They're giving to the project. We've gotten many donations from local business leaders who are not Alliance. They have no clue what the Alliance was about until we showed up, because frankly, we don't have a lot of Alliance churches in Columbus. It's growing and we have more church planting ideas, but that it's not like we have 50 Alliance churches that they're well aware of. And so that's just been really cool, and a cool kind of person of peace, God orchestrated, brought together moment for us.
Yeah, so all kinds of people, whether they're Alliance people or local Columbus people who had maybe never heard of the Alliance previously, are in on the missional aspect of Project Reimagine. So in spite of the fact that we're still in this temporary office building, which is nice, but we're crammed in here like sardines, and you know, we don't have a coffee shop here or anything like that. Would it still be fair to say that our national office employees already have greater engagement in the community than we did in the past?
I think it would be fair to say that some of missional engagement is about paradigm shift, and even mental and emotional paradigm shift. I think because we knew we were coming to Columbus with intention, a lot of our folks are looking for more opportunities, I think, than was previously look for. We had people engaged in the community, don't get me wrong. We had people connected to the Springs Rescue Mission and lots of stuff. But because we're now doing some volunteer hours on work time as well, and because we're looking for ministry partners in a new place, just like if you move into a community to church plant, you go as a missionary, there is more buzz and excitement about some of that lean in. So we've got, it was cool to see last couple months ago, there's an organization called Joseph's Coat that is trying to clothe people who need clothing, populations in need. And it's been fun on my team to see a lot of excitement to do, like, hey, we can build their website. We can create some communications for them. We can serve as a board member. So while I serve at our local food pantry a lot, and some of our folks do, it's a fun chance for me to use my French. We have a lot of Africans living in town, and I speak French half the time. Bob Sanford, who I work with, loves it because a lot of people try to cut corners at the thing and they are like, yeah, I don't speak English. And then he brings me over and we solve the problems. But while I'm doing that, we have other people connected at places, you know, doing marketing or, you know, serving in pregnancy centers. And I would just say the overall atmosphere of Lean In with our community has changed and it's refreshing. I think some of that was just a mental shift. We could have done some of that in Colorado. I think some of it is we have a lot of new staff who know what they're signing up for when they join. And we've got people who, if they made the move, it wasn't just about the fact that they wanted to keep their job so bad. You know, as we all know in ministry, you can get another job that pays the same or more for the most part. People who made this move, they wanted to make the move for missional reasons because they believed in the idea and they wanted to engage. So I'm encouraged by what's going on. And it's cool because it shows that when we build our camp, it's going to be great and it's going to be really cool. It God is not dependent on a building and neither are we. And so we've got opportunities all the time if we will shift our mindset and our openness. And that's happened.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and it sure seems like there's a little bit of a contagiousness to this idea of using our buildings in a way that engages a community instead of making them just about ourselves. So what are you seeing outside the national office in our churches or other ministries in our denomination that indicates that maybe there is a little bit of a ripple effect building here?
This is another fun, maybe unforeseen, maybe hoped for consequence of this decision, but we're having these conversations a lot. I've been in churches where I was in a church in New York City, and the board said, if our denomination is willing to do this and take this risk, so should we. We're going to get out and go engage the community in a community center kind of way. And they made that decision to go after that in Brooklyn. I've had a number of pastor conversations where even early on where they're like, we should probably change our sanctuary a bit. We're only using it twice a week. One pastor said, what if we changed our back wall into a climbing wall and we engage the community that way? A lot of different churches, I think coming out of COVID too, understanding that things have changed. Even we learned a lot about our own facilities, but I see this conversation growing and I'm seeing a lot of examples popping up from district offices to churches to pastor conversations that are considering what does our presence in our community look like and what do we need to ask, maybe ask different questions about those kind of things. There's a book that was recently written called Leading Faithful Innovation. And I know the author personally, he's lived this out, church planter in Twin Cities, a non-alliance guy, but really just an amazing guy. And they use the language of experimenting a lot. Like with the church, you can experiment, you can, you know, try some things out. You guys talk about this on the podcast often about what does it look like to try new things to, you know, and I think I see some openness and willingness. We had a church in Tiffin, just an hour from us. The pastor was here for our prayer. We prayer walked our property. And Brent said, you know, this is inspiring us. And we're looking at a downtown kind of a second location to get more embedded in the city so that we're not disconnected from reality. So those conversations are happening, I would say probably weekly that I'm having conversations with people.
Yeah. Love it. Love it.
Yeah, love what Brent Nussbaum and the troops up there in Tiffin are doing. I had the privilege of being up there in January and very encouraged. People from colleges in the area, people from halfway house. I mean, totally. they're having cutting edge ministry. Allegheny Center is another place. They just built the hub and opened it up, community aimed, community meeting rooms, coffee shop for the community. And fantastic. Getting out of our shell, so to speak, and getting out into the mainstream of the marketplace and the community. But not every church can build a new building. Certainly not every church can relocate. So, Tim, talk about some ways churches might consider using their existing buildings to raise their connection level with the community.
Yeah. So throughout these conversations, we recently, I'll answer your question. I'll talk about a connection first. We met some folks who are leading an organization called Rooted Good, Mark and team over there. And I know some districts who are leaning in with them already, Alliance Northwest, Metro District. There's some others that are already starting to look, some different local churches. They basically are doing self-guided consultation through a box that they give you fairly inexpensively, and to walk you through what is your place in the community and how could you use your building. They got started through COVID because they realized that so many buildings were sitting empty, and a lot of churches that are maybe people few, but building strong or property strong, could leverage that. And one of their stories that they used was in San Jose, California, extremely expensive real estate. This church had gone down to 20 people, no pastor, but they still had a desire to be impactful in the community. They decided to leverage half their property as affordable housing. The church is now growing. People are coming to faith because they have relevance now in the community again. It was an income stream for them, but it also was just an open-handed, let's mingle now with the community. We're seeing churches that are starting to consider, you know, what, again, should we use our building not only to share with church plants? But I love that. And especially immigrant church plants. Ours always has one or two congregations using it. We do not have a large church. It's on, you know, 100 people. So that's a cool thing. But also, how do we use our kitchens? How do we use our, you know, gym? How do we use? And so there was a, in downtown Columbus here, there was a church that they just decided, we're going to turn one of our wings into this coffee shop. We're in a foot traffic area. We just need to use our building, not just for us. And so there's a growing conversation that I'm glad for, and it feels like it's in line with what drove us. We didn't really know about any of these organizations. We just felt like it was the right thing to do for our office. But I feel like there's a growing conversation around this, and churches can get creative. I would say it takes a process. It takes a long, prayerful process of discussion and decision-making, but it's possible to reconsider.
Yep.
That's beautiful. That's encouraging. And it's wonderful to see this kind of fruit of something we didn't necessarily plan for, but it's happening, you know, and that's right. A beautiful thing. So as we wrap up today, Tim, we'd love to have you just share from your heart with the pastors and the leaders of our churches that are listening to this. What are you longing to see happening in our Alliance churches across the U.S.?
Yeah. Thanks for that question and the opportunity to share that. It feels like we are, every generation and every moment feels like, wow, we're at a crux of something, but it does feel like we're in a unique moment in America, at least. We are in a growingly post-Christian environment, a multi-religious, multi-ethnic, multi-everything moment. And I really think our Alliance churches are positioned to have impact in this kind of world. We are not the kind of group that is so rigid in our approach. I mean, you can go to an Alliance church and it feels like, man, I'm in an Assemblies church. And then you go to a different one, it feels like I'm in a Southern Baptist church. And you go to a different one, it feels like I'm in a Wesleyan church. Now, some of that we do have to, you know, maintain boundaries and borders around the essentials of the faith. But I think that positions us well to be effective in growing, changing communities. And because we are deeper life and missions people. And if we really are deeper life and missions people, here's what I would say. This is what I long for. I think people are longing for encounter. And so I long for our churches to be places where encounter can happen. True encounter with God and true encounter with other people. Not a religious ceremony, not a religious activity, but true encounter with the Spirit of God. Without all the, Jim Rudd had a great post a week or two ago. I think you guys saw it on Facebook. Like I want all of the Holy Spirit has without some of the other stuff that gets added on that just creates sensational environments for the sake of sensational environments at times. Mm-hmm. But I think the Alliance has this core and this history of vibrancy and expectation for the Holy Spirit. I do long for that in certain churches that have stopped believing that God is real or that he's really going to encounter us. You know, recently we lost my mentor, Martin Sanders, mentor to many of us. And one of the things he taught me in seminary was, look, the big difference between an effective Sunday service and a non-effective Sunday service is expectation. If people believe they're coming in and God's going to meet them, he does. Mm-hmm. Even if it seems boring on the outside or whatever. And so to stir up expectation and encounter. And the second is engagement. We do not have the luxury of hoping people will just come to church anymore. That's just not going to happen. In some places, the product is good enough. Some people will come.
Yeah.
But for the most part, we have to be missionaries in different ways than we ever have before. So I long for people to not want to win the wrong battles.
Mm, yes, I agree.
And you can fill in the blank for a lot there, but actual engagement and then seeing people come to faith, discipled, released from ministry. So vibrant places where we're encountering and we're engaging. So I long for us to be deeper life and missions people. I think where we see that well, the life of Christ is lived out in a congregation, and where we don't, it's disappointing.
Yeah. Great observations, Tim. Really appreciate your leadership. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us today. And we pray God's best for you in the days ahead.
Absolutely. Thanks for sharing.
Thanks, Terry. And I'm honored that this is your last act as VP. These are going to be your final words as VP.
Final words. Wow.
At least you got to spend it with me and Alan.
I know. What more could he ask?
Happy three baseball fans, and we didn't even talk about baseball on this podcast. I do not understand.
And my team was playing during it. And
wow.
Against
your team.
You guys are sacrificing. Is this
like 4-0? Good job.
Oh, man. It was 0-0 when the pot before the podcast started. Now we're losing. It's your fault, Tim Meyer.
Is this the Monday of Patriots Day or something?
Patriots Day.
Well, it's Marathon Monday. Yeah, it's
Boston Marathon.
Yeah, I'm really tuned into that running thing. So, you know, I'm keenly aware of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys.
Yeah.
Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you.
Yeah.
So, great conversation with Tim Meyer. What'd you latch hold of there, Alan, that inspired you a little bit today?
Well, I think kind of like we said in the intro, I think it's, you know, when this whole conversation started about the national office relocating, I don't really think anybody anticipated that it would actually help churches think about, are we really getting the most out of our building and using it for all the kingdom purposes it could be in, and making it a blessing to the community? And I think it's really sparked that conversation for a lot of churches.
Yeah, Tim framed that very well. I love the way he networks with people. We've been here 3 years, and I think he knows every leader in the city of Columbus. And
love it.
Widely read. He put me onto a couple of books there that I wrote down. And just a great interview. Really appreciate Tim so much.
So, good man. Great thing.
Keep the faith.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Equipping You podcast. If you liked this episode, please consider subscribing and sharing it with a friend. For more information about this podcast and other ministries of the Alliance, visit equippingyou.org.